Hi, welcome to Rockle and Russell's YouTube review. Each week we'll be setting each other challenges on YouTube and finding videos for hopefully your entertainment. Hope you enjoy this current episode.
Yeah, I don't even know what it's really been called this episode.
I was thinking that on the way home from work. Like worst sporting moments is bad because
it's personal, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and also like people would say like Hillsborough should be in there or like the Bradford Fire.
Yeah, it's not anything too tragic. It's more kind of like
disappointing memories.
Yeah. our least favourite moments in sport, even though one of our clips is probably not based on sport. But yeah. So how's your week been, mate?
Yeah, like Dolly's at school properly as of like today.
Yeah. Obligatory photo at the front door.
Yeah.
Excellent.
She went three times last week on little two and a half, three hours she was there.
Right.
Then it's a sudden jump then because today was the real thing and like because we both work.
Yeah.
She's in like breakfast club and after school club.
Oh, bloody hell. Good work.
So it's like a full day. She's there from like 8 o'clock and potentially stay until like nearly six if we were to keep her there for the whole thing, which both of us are not particularly happy about. But I don't know if there's a way around it in modern age where you both work. What else can you do?
Hire a nanny. I think that's the only thing. But then that's cuts. You wouldn't need to pay for that after school club then, would you?
Yeah, I think we're going to gradually figure out ways of, unfortunately, at my work, I'm in a position where I can't make my hours up, but there's so much stuff that I can be doing like at 10 o'clock tonight on my laptop that I could finish work at four, sign off for like 2 hours and then start work again at like 9 o'clock at night if it was better. Which I'd prefer not to have to do, but you know, if I could do something like that once a week, and Emma can get away early once a week, you know, we can limit it so she's not stuck there for that full long day every day.
How does she find it?
Yeah, she's all right. She's pretty quiet. She's not like coming home like wildly excited, but she's not coming home like she's happy when she goes in and happy when she comes home. So.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised as your daughter that she's not running the place yet. Everything's not organized. Although, yeah, so not too bad a week then. Because I think we're getting back to normal, aren't we, me and you, with this. No, we're not interviewing anyone and it's not a special about someone we like who's dead. So we're back to our normal, hopefully, like me asking you stupid questions and...
bread and butter.
Yeah, the classic Rocco. And when we look back at this in 100 years, mate, when they look back at it, historians, it will be, they went back to a classic episode of disappointing moments in sport. Speaking about Alicia today, actually, thinking about maybe I'll contact her. But then also, I don't think I will. I think it's almost a definite no. And I think even if she came on, I think I'd be a bit embarrassed to kind of, I know you from school kind of thing, you know.
I wouldn't find that as, even though like the Jaguar skills, the shared interests other than being from the same sort of place were maybe more, I wouldn't know what to speak to her about. I wouldn't be like, your boyfriend never washes up, eh?
And he never cleans up. No, he never cleans up. Yeah. But you must have served her when you worked in the Oak. Have you ever served Alicia when she used to come in there?
A few times. Do you remember when Yemi used to do his nights there?
So, oh, right, yeah.
He knew her. He brought her down a couple of times to try and kind of, you know...
Yeah, raise the profile.
Yeah, but then I think there was, on one of the, at least one of the nights, there was a massive fight. And then I think she probably thought, nah.
Yeah. What would she ask? What she drink?
No, I don't think she got her own drinks.
No, was Harvey in tow as well?
No, I think that was post. Yeah, well, there's the famous raffle. Yeah, the blue.
To our listeners, she wrapped the raffle, didn't she?
Yeah,
and the rap was on the blue, it's 152. But said in her, on the blue, but it was amazing. And it was great of her to do that. But also, I felt really like, oh, God, what is she doing?
Well, you see the difficulty in a pub like that of putting yourself up on a stage to like call a raffle, knowing that the slightest thing you do. Like, I remember when Eamon was calling the raffle once somewhere.
Yeah.
And he referred to the ticket as being...
on the salmon.
Not orange.
Yeah.
Salmon. And I think about 2 years, people used to...
Yeah.
The piss out of him for choosing to say salmon, which is just like anything you say is just going to be completely just made turned against you for the next 3 years of your life.
Yeah, because but then Eamon was really funny, but then like if you hung around with him too much, it'd be a bit quiet, you know. But in every now and then he'd come out with an absolute corker of a joke, you know. Yeah, it's all the like anyway. Eamon was wearing a three-piece suit at the football presentation night when we were playing for Welling Garden. And you get like a, it was like a serve yourself. You went up and the waitress would give you, and it was like a roast dinner. And the girl said to him, stuffing in Yorkshire. And he, stuffing in Yorkshire. And he went, I don't care where we do it, love. And like for the next three people in the queue, it was really funny. And then it kind of obviously spread around. But yeah, they were good days, weren't they? Did you ever, after football, come down the Shamrock? Or
yeah, occasionally, mainly the fairway, but then occasionally you'd have a day out and end up somewhere different. I went in the Shamrock quite a few times, actually, because that period, I don't know how long it was now, maybe a year or so, where I spent a lot of time with Shafty.
Yeah, yeah.
So those nights would end, days would start and nights would potentially end in the Shamrock more often. That was probably the period where I went there more.
Yeah. And Shafty actually texted me yesterday, which was out of the blue. Sent me a picture of someone, a video of someone scoring a goal. And he said OTG, which was my great nickname. And I thought that goal was actually nothing like my goal. My goal was 300 times better. And I was happy to send back. I think he's out in America now, isn't he? Coaching. He's actually done a good level.
I don't know where exactly. But he is, yeah.
Because he worked for Celtic and he's worked for, like, he's done all right for himself, hasn't he? For a fucking, for a bang average footballer.
Did the Celtic ladies for a while, didn't he?
Yeah. I think he had a really bad injury, didn't he? Was it to his brain or something?
Yeah, I think it might have been a spinal thing.
Oh, right.
But I don't think it was an accident. I think it was something that was identified and then operated on. But I think because it was a spinal nervous thing, it was potentially linked to his brain. I'm not sure though. I'm sort of guessing a little bit.
Yeah, and then at the age of like 42 or 43, he became like the fittest bloke in the world, didn't he? Like he had a leg pack and like at like he was as lean as anything.
I forgot about that. He there was pictures for a while. He did like bodybuilding posing.
Yeah,
pictures,
fitness modelling with like Jimmy Anderson and stuff, didn't he? Yeah.
Those ones where they wobble their leg that Bert does.
Yeah.
Bert does the moves, not the bodybuilding.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know Shafty, he's like a not really nice bloke, but an enigma, isn't he? You don't know what kind of Shafty you're getting sometimes.
Yeah.
But always happy and always nice. So if you ever listen
to
this.
We had a holiday.
Bloody hell. If you imagine, like, we went five of us on holiday, me, Rockall, Carl Ashton, Ross Phillips and Shafty. And that, I don't think if we were in a room together now, we'd talk to each other. It's mad, isn't it, how it worked? We had a great time. But, Shafty got like a henna tattoo on the first night of his nickname on his back. And everything he kind of said to me meant it was real. And it was the worst thing I'd ever seen. I think we spoke about that holiday before because someone shit the bed, didn't they?
A few things. Like any holiday like that, it's full of like moments that you remember.
Yeah. Was that the one where you got a henna tattoo of WKD Blue? So when you were too drunk, you could just point at it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe more people haven't done that.
And Brandon, that was the Brandon Block, wasn't it, as well?
Oh, yeah. Block.
I wasn't trying to be rude. We just saw him, and obviously, because he was a face and you've had a drink, you're like, hey, you know, like Brandon Block. And you're usually expecting him to just, like, wave or not stop and carry on walking. But he actually stopped and actually was like, spoke to us and was like, oh, yeah, you're coming in, boys. And for some reason, I didn't just lie and go, yeah. And I said, no, probably not. I'm not a massive fan of that type of music.
He took it with good grace, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that was a good holiday. I can't even remember where it was. Was it Cavos?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been on Cavos and Falaraki with you, I think. And then I've been to Ainapo and then... might have mentioned it on the podcast. I went on a stag do to Magaluf, I think. And then on the last night, I went into a bar and just thought, I've been here. And it was from Ian Taylor's stag do.
Oh, right.
Where was that?
Yeah, Magaluf.
Magaluf, yeah. We went into like Lineker's and I was like, oh, God, I've got such deja vu. And then, oh, fuck, I've actually been here. It took me four days to realise that.
We did Cavos with that little group that you said, and then the Falaraki trip was the one that was during the World Cup, which was some of the same people, wasn't it? Like, Carl Ashton was there again, Ross was there again.
Yeah, that was a really good one, with CJ and Scott Cox.
Scott, CJ and Cocky and that lot were there. And me and you, other than that, our trips abroad would have... Oh, obviously, we've been in Chicago together.
Chicago for your brother's wedding. We're in Berlin for my stag do. So, yeah, we've actually been quite a few places together.
Hamburg, Manish's.
Hamburg, yeah, God.
Mine, in Spain for mine.
Was that Spain or Portugal?
Yeah, no, mine was just mainland Spain, just like one of the Costas.
I don't remember much about being there. I've met or anything other than you being dressed as Jason Lee and stopping a fight by taking a wig off. Yeah. Oh, that was, I don't know if we should explain that story, but we're all dressed as famous ex-footballers. That was a good one. Yeah. It was very much based around a swimming pool, like kind of thing, wasn't it? When you're just sitting about, there wasn't too many activities, which sometimes stag do.
I think I kind of directed it that way a little bit. I said to the people organising it, don't feel pressured to book.
Yeah. We're going paintballing and we get there. It's like a 2-hour drive and then it's just really expensive and no one wants to be there kind of thing.
Yeah.
But like CJ's one. Yeah. CJ's stag do was in Riga in Latvia. And we basically just stayed in an Irish bar for 3 days. It was much, much more happy that if you lost people or like you get up in the morning and no one's there, you know, oh, I'll just go to the Irish bar. That'll be where everyone is.
Where we went on mine was funny, like you said about that deja vu, like ending up in a bar in Magaluf that you realise you've been before. One of the main reasons we went to that town where we went to a mine was that was where I went that time when I got drunk at uni and we just moved to Spain. And I had just the weird, up until that stag do, which hasn't really improved it massively, I had the weirdest kind of hazy memory of that place.
Right.
And I just, it would be a funny place to go back to because it's got a story behind it.
Yeah.
So I just thought it's a good excuse. I probably would never go there any other way. So because I had the stag do and it was kind of my choice to an extent of where we went, I was like, let's just go there. You know, if we went to Portugal, Spain, Ibiza, Magaluf, it would essentially be the same, near the sea, near the pool.
Yeah.
There's not that Benamedina isn't as big as some of the other resorts we could have gone to.
Yeah.
But like you just said, on those big stag do groups like that, you end up in the same three or four places anyway, don't you?
Yeah.
Places that will let you in.
Yeah. I can't remember. I think it was Ian Taylor's stag do when we all bought fancy dress outfits and then someone, you picked a name out of the hat and whoever's name you pulled out, you had to wear their fancy dress, which was a great idea. I can't remember how we come up with it, but it was so much fun. But then Sav Kaliskan got the big, the Turkish... like kebab shop owner, the hat and the hairy chest and that. And he pulled out his own name. It's so fucking funny. Because obviously him being Turkish and stuff. And then he was all night, he just looked like a kebab shop owner. Yeah. he'd got the night off, but come out in his uniform.
It wasn't too over the top, was it?
No, exactly.
It was just pretty subtle.
Yeah, there were some good outfits. I remember Dave Taylor being... I can't remember the name of the guy, but a guy who drinks in the football club, he had to dress as him.
my one was a very niche that the person, I think Mark Taylor pulled mine out and just was like, I'm not wearing that, because it was the bloke who used to go by Captain Panzanger. But because it consisted of a red t-shirt with Captain Panzanger written on it and then big headphones that he always used to walk around in and a fake moustache and then just ill-fitting cheap combat trousers, Mark was just saying, it's not enough of a fancy dress because I'll take the moustache off because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The rest of it is too close to just people might think that I'm just wearing my clothes. It's not got some, it's not got anything about it that makes it obvious that it's fancy dress.
Yeah. I remember I bought some Donna trainers for my outfit, and I wanted the biggest size I could possibly get. So like in sport and soccer, obviously you don't want to spend too much money on it. And I said, yeah. What's the largest size you've got in these? And they said, well, what size are you? I'm like, no, these aren't for me. I just need a really big pair. It's like a joke. And he goes like, well, what size are you? And I thought, oh God, in the Galleria, you know, you're not going to get. And he came back with size 13, these Donna trainers. Oh my God. I was so, and then after the night where we all wear the all fancy dress, I think Lewis Phillips had to wear my one. He went, oh, do you want these trainers back? No. Gonna do my canoe back to fucking England in them or something. But yeah, oh, that was good time. I do enjoy a stag do. Did you come aboard stag then? Because we went to like an adults activity centre, like still like childish games, relay races and stuff. And I remember they got like, it was an archery bit, and Bod picked up an arrow and just went to fired it in the air to his left, like 200 yards into like wherever. I just remember thinking, this is not going well. that could actually be murder, you know. I'm glad I'm not going to go on too many more. Aren't you?
Yeah, I can't. I've got nothing like that in the pipeline, I don't think. And I don't know when there might be either.
Well, two of my good friends, Greg and Wayne, are not married yet.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Greg is actually engaged. Yeah, I'm not sure. I even got him on the phone the other day. Imagine that, trying to sort something out. And he was in the car, so I couldn't really fucking hear him. I phoned him six times, and then he said he'd call me back after golf. And I'm still waiting 3 days later. But I'm not sure if he's got engaged yet, but I don't think he is. But I think when you get to that stage now, you know, they've got two kids and they're very happy together. And Gemma's great for him, and she's a lovely woman. He might as well just sign a form, you know. I don't think there's any point of going through her. Stag do and stuff now.
No, and I was just saying to Emma the other day, actually, Greg is probably still the person above like everyone from that group who I just still find it unusual when I see things on like Facebook and that of him on a like a family holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's because I don't think I've been around since he's, so he probably would feel the same about me because we've not been around each other while at the time that we've had children. So it just, it's, you've never seen, like, obviously a lot of our friends, I've seen them with their kids. I was there when they had them, and I've seen them sort of, you know, the early couple of years, but the people who you just know have now had kids that you've never seen with them.
But I'm quite close with Dave's three girls, Ella, Evie and Maddie. I support it. That'd be funny if I said I was quite close to them and then got their names wrong. but in a way, I really miss when it's their birthdays and stuff. I'm really gutted that I'm here almost. That makes sense. And I'm Evie's godfather, but then, you know, I don't want to kind of concentrate more on her or anything like that. Like, it's just, you know, it's just. But yeah, it was their birthday the other day, and I was just gutted that I couldn't. I was a bit late as well. Like, I couldn't just go Amazon it, send something over. So luckily I'm going back to Welling Garden, hopefully in October, and I'm going to see him then. I doubt Dave listens to this. I think he said he does listen, but I very much doubt he does. And
sure. He's still not watched the end of The Last Dance. I remember once when I went to that Euros match in 2016 with work, and we had like the platinum boxes, and when we were leaving, the compliment, they were giving out like footballs, like the proper nice branded like Adidas Euro balls, and I grabbed like three, and then sort of we got drunk that night, so kind of forgot, woke up in my hotel room in the morning and just had these three lovely footballs on the floor, and I was like, oh, that's nice, that's the good. But then someone said, oh, make sure you deflate them before you try and get them on the plane. So we were walking around the next day and found a sports shop that had like valves in that we were able to put them in and deflate them a little bit. And then I don't know if it was one or two. I think I donated a couple of mine to the person, one of the people that was there, because they were like, oh, I want to give them to loads of people. And by that point, I was like, I'm not, although it's nice to have this, I don't need this football with the memento. So I was like, I'll give it to Dave for the girls. So the next time I went around there, I took it and I gave it to him. And he was obviously really chuffed with it. And then I went back there a few years later, and you know, like garden footballs.
Yeah.
they end up just like furry.
Yeah.
Yeah, fluffy. I just saw it and I was like, oh man, that's it. That's the ball. I don't know what I was expecting it to be up on a shelf on a plinth or something.
Yeah, I don't think that would have suited. And a couple of things, actually. We've now got two more reviews on iTunes. One from Naomi Austin, who says we come up with some good stuff. And, you know, she's an amazing artist. And if you want any commissions and stuff, please get hold of her on Instagram.
Naomi's Art Diary. But it looks, yes, because of...
Naomi's Art Diary is the one you need to look up.
Because of the IS at the end of Naomi's, it can be read as it's one of those ones that gets jumbled up. But yeah, Naomi's Art
Diary. So yeah, if you've got any commission, she's a fantastic artist. And like, follow her on Instagram. You see that like ceiling of the wedding venue she did today? Have you been on there? Absolutely fantastic. Quite frankly, we're hilarious. Reminds me of my youth and why I love Giblin's laugh. So that's very kind of her to put. I think I've got a really annoying laugh, so that's even nicer. And then Sealsy, which I can only imagine is Martin Seal, or if it's Dave Seal, his dad, I do apologise. I love listening to the podcast while driving to work, as the topics that are often discussed remind me of my youth. A good mixture of laughs, facts and recommendations for films, TV and music. The guest episodes are always good, especially the ones with Richard Luck and Boise. It's just like listening to your mates down the pub. We get that quite a bit, don't we?
mates down the pub, yeah,
just listening to people chat shit down a pub. But if I can hear someone else's conversation while I'm in a pub, it normally gets on my nerves, doesn't it? Does it not you?
Oh god, I don't know. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. You have to try and switch off, don't you? Because you don't want to hear anything that then starts taking your attention away from the person that you're with.
Yeah. Well, if you're watching football and someone's saying something really stupid, I try and get someone's attention, like, have you heard that? Or did you hear what he said, kind of thing, you know?
Oh, football strangers in pubs is one of the worst things.
Mm. Yeah, a couple of times in the Oak or the football club, someone would come in and think it is funny to purposely wind up the fans of another team, even though they're not a supporter of the team they're playing, and have got, like, either beat up or kicked out, you know?
Yeah.
Don't understand why people do that.
No, but even like the pundits now are a little bit like that, aren't they? Like they sort of refer back to their allegiances and sort of have digs at each other. And I just think, be quiet. But then
I think it's such a childish thing to do.
An age where Paddy McGuinness is the question of sport host. So things
have
changed.
What the fuck is that about? He's not funny. He's got an accent. He's not funny. John Bishop. John Bishop isn't funny. He's just got an accent. I thought Alex Scott was going to do it, but apparently she's doing everything else. Shall we get on with a clip? Right.
Was complete on December 16th in the year 2000 with his iconic gesture of catching the ball with the goal seemingly at his mercy against Everton.
Di Canio, sportingly, almost unbelievably catches the ball there. What nerve does that take? How many players would have headed that goalwards? And the whole ground rises to what must be one of the moments of the season.
But what prompted this act of kindness? There was no suggestion that Di Canio had calmed as a character.
I won't translate what he's saying. It's in English.
But with the score 1-1 with just a couple of minutes left, he surprised everyone. West Ham were chasing Europe at the time, and his manager Harry Redknapp said he didn't know whether to kiss him or kill him.
I couldn't imagine the reaction around the world. At the end, I received the Fair Play Award. To be honest, it wasn't my intention, because I don't think that I was an angel, not only at the time in my life, but also I wasn't a devil, this is for sure. Everything happened to me after that gesture was only positive.
I didn't know.
So you've chosen when Paolo Di Canio catches the ball against Everton in the Premier League and is one of the greatest acts of sportsmanship of all time. And you, Mark, have it down as one of the most disappointing moments in sport.
As well, I don't know if you saw me laughing as that went on. The more that people spoke, and then when it went on to Di Canio as well, the more I started to realise how mean-spirited of me this must sound. But let me explain.
Okay.
The thing itself could have passed me by, and I'd just, you know, see it in a few seconds and forget it forever in the next two.
Right.
And but it comes up so consistently on these like greatest sport moments, most shocking sports moments, funniest sports moments, when you have like the talking heads describing things. And I hate the way even that bloke who was just narrating it then said, like, the goal at his mercy. It wasn't.
Yeah.
No. Like, people are making out, if you haven't seen this, people are making out as if the ball dropped to him like 6 yards out with no one in front of him. He was on the edge of the box. The ball was coming at him head height. He had a defender tight behind him, one in front of him, and at least one between him and the goal.
Yeah.
And he gets too much credit.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong at all. Like, that is a tough chance. But then, you know, the Canio stability, he could have had a touch out his feet and it would have been easier. But I think Trevin Sinclair's the real prick here for putting the ball in the box. Like, he could have just turned and knocked it 2 yards further past him. But then...
Well, that was the... do you remember when Kanu and Overmars got done for this?
Yeah.
Against Sheffield United.
They replayed that whole... But it was strange because Arsene Wenger was like, straight away, yeah, we'll replay it. But then, should it have done? I don't know. I think it's probably the right thing to do, but also a really shit thing to do.
Like, the worst thing about it was when he offered to replay it, they then started saying, yeah, at our ground, though, replay to ours.
Oh, right.
And then I was thinking, that at that point, I would have retracted the offer if I was Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
I know that's a big if, if I was Arsene Wenger. All the things he's done in his career, I'd be like, if I was him, I would have retracted that offer to... Was it Steve Bruce? Was he the manager of the opposition at the time?
I watched that Premier League, like it's called Fever Pitch or something. It was on last night. Did you see
any
of that?
Oh, okay.
The beginning of
the adverts.
It was really good, but it was a bit like a Premier League years, but with told more seriously.
Oh, right.
But then it was amazing. I think it was the Leeds chairman or the Hull chairman were just saying this is elitist, like a bit like they were doing with Super League, like, this will never work. This has been the same. We've done this the same way for 100 years. Why are we changing it now? And like David Dean's just in his massive house, like in the most beautiful kitchen with all the artwork on the walls, just going, well, you know, it's probably meant to change. I met David Dean at the school I worked at. He came in and I was really nervous to meet him because I had 1,000 questions in my head. But also I knew full well I wasn't going to have much time with him because he was about to do a speech to the sixth formers about business and football, but then just told a load of Arsenal anecdotes that I'd heard before. Like, you know, the Patrick Vieira learned to say Spurs are shit from Ray Parlour. He told that story kind of thing. And I had an Arsenal lanyard because we had to wear lanyards all the time. So I had an Arsenal one so kids can talk to you about football or whatever. And he goes, here he is, Arsenal's new signing. And I thought... Oh, I'm not eight. I'm 28 at best. And yeah, I had my photo taken with him terribly by this. The teacher showing him round was a massive Liverpool fan and really hated Arsenal. Like, he used an Arsenal shirt as his board rubber kind of thing. Like, thought it was funny kind of. And he took a really bad photo of me and David Dean. And I just thought, oh, that was really shit. Really crap thing for you to do. Like, the shoe on the other foot. I don't know who the chairman of Liverpool was back then, but. And it was a lot of Cantona versus Shearer almost. But then they showed Dion Dublin getting injured in his first kind of couple of games, and then that's why they bought Eric Cantona. You think if Dion Dublin didn't break his leg, they wouldn't have had Eric Cantona, and then they wouldn't have gone on to getting all these kids through as well and winning leagues and doing so well.
But you can be that small, can't it, the change?
Yeah. Were you ever a fan of Paolo Di Canio? I don't think I've ever liked him.
I didn't dislike him or particularly like him. Obviously, there was a couple of goals that he scored, which
if he came to Arsenal, would you think, oh, that's a good signing? I don't ever think
it's one of them ones that you'd just be worried about the kind of negative energy that he can attract.
Yeah. Because that was that when he became a manager, is it Swindon? And he's trying to fight one of his players on a pitch and get him down the tunnel out of the way and stuff. Just like you couldn't play under him. Can you imagine that though? If you were a footballer and he bought you and you have to go there, you don't have a say in it. You're there.
Well, yeah, because when I saw those bits of him like fighting and carrying on with his own team and everything, usually there's two thoughts in your head. Either he's genuinely a lunatic, in which case it's not good, or he's acting up, he's doing like a Wolf out of Gladiators kind of show. And then either way, like, no thanks.
And when people say, like, Billy Jones is the hardest footballer they've ever played against, I don't think he's particularly hard. I just think he was a lunatic. I think on a football pitch, you have that protection. You're just basically, you get sent off and that's it. You don't, it's not like a bar fight. No one's got a knife down their sock. Oh, it actually did happen, didn't it, in a game in South America. Someone played with a razor on their finger or something, taped to their finger, and was cutting people and poking them and stuff. Imagine that. Anyway, I'll look that up, but that's a quite a disappointing moment in sport, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
I was playing and then someone cut me.
Duncan Ferguson's the one who I think is sort of genuinely a hard case when you hear all of those kind of, who's the hardest footballer?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think, like you said about Mike Tyson a few weeks ago, like if you were in a room with him, he would genuinely beat you up, like for not any particular reason. He wouldn't try and sugarcoat anything. He would just slap you around the head. But my dad used to play golf with Mick Harford, and he was a massive bloke. I didn't realise it. And then we were lucky enough to go watch Luton and got to sit in the manager's office before the game. And like the door, there was a knock on the door. And it was only me and my dad in the manager's office at the time, and I opened it up and it was like Dimitri Karin. Like, is Mick about? And I was like, no, Dimitri Karin, he's not. But yeah, he asked me if I enjoyed the game and slapped me around the back of the head, like, because he knew I was like my dad's son. And it hurt. it rocked me a little bit.
Do you remember that time when there was a team, I don't know who it was, playing against Mick Harford, and they scored and they had this celebration where they all laid on their back, like, with their legs and arms.
The dead ant said celebration.
Yeah, and he just walks through them all and, like, treads on them as he walks through.
Yeah, he was the a kettle of water for that for those ants. Yeah, but I didn't ever think Paolo Di Canio was hard. I just thought he was unhinged. And like the time he pushes the referee, which is the worst fall over I've ever seen, I just thought he was a lunatic. Never, just had no respect for him. And then Nigel Winterburn does no favours for himself when he's coming off the pitch. Like
the flinch.
Oh, it's the flinch that shook the world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of embarrassing, wouldn't it? But there you go.
Nigel Winterburn managed to come out of that scenario as the one that people were laughing at.
Yeah. I remember this. I think it's on, you know, around the Emirates, they have little stories about some, like, quotes from people or stories about people. Yeah. And one of them was about Nigel Winterburn, where this guy, his mate had a program and he didn't have a program. And he said, oh, where'd you get it from? And he went, oh, down the other end. And he goes, oh, I can't get there because I'd have to go out the ground. And Nigel Winterburn goes, who's warming up near him, said, I'll go and get it, gives you money. And he went off down the other end of the stadium, like on the pitch, got a program, ran back, gave it to the bloke and the change. Like, unbelievable.
those programs, that's the reason. So it's not the moment itself that bothered me, it's what it's led to. And those talking heads, funniest moments. You know when they show the clip, like it's a countdown of 20 to 1, and they show the clip about... maybe in the space of a few minutes they show it about 10 times
and then
they sit down people who blatantly don't remember it happening, who've just been shown it a minute before they started recording them, so you have to sit there and listen to like Lee Latchford Evans pretending that he remembered it, and just as he's telling you what happened, what that you've just seen, and that you're watching the footage again with Lee Latchford Evans' voice in the background, and then I watched those programs all the way from 20 to
1. What made you think of Lee Latchford Evans over anyone? Have you seen one with him in it? Surely not.
I don't know. I suppose I've just got a big pool of like NAF
random names.
NAF references. I do it to Emma when she's watching Love Island. It's one of my things.
Oh right.
To entertain myself when they're building the tension and saying, oh, I'm gonna couple up with, and then I will always say a name.
Gary Newbon. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, something
I'll do
the niche of the better.
Yeah, I do that with if I can't remember someone's name or something, like, oh, a funny thing happened to work at work today. I was working with, and then I'll just say, like, Peter Bernetti, and so I just almost check that Zoe's listening, but I don't think she ever has.
No.
Yeah, I normally go for, like when we used to try and get into the squash club, I go with a theme of, like, yeah. And it normally ends at Paul Chuckle, but... Yeah. Oh, Lee Latchford Evans. Oh.
What can he do? What does he have the strength left to do?
Undertaker with Brock Lesnar up high. Perhaps looking for the Tombstone Pile Driver.
Does he have the strength left?
Yes! Tombstone Pile Driver! The cover on Lesnar! Lesnar kicked out at two!
My God. These guys have hit each other with everything they have.
Two F5s. Undertaker kicked out both times. Tombstone Pile Driver. Brock Lesnar kicks out. Oh. Undertaker!
Two incredible athletes fighting for their place in history.
Undertaker signals it's over.
Maybe he's not human.
Again. Oh. All right, Brock Lesnar countered. Brock Lesnar countered. Lesnar countered. He's got Undertaker up at his shoulders again.
Not again.
Going for a triple. A third F5 to the Undertaker. Brock Lesnar into the cover. Hugs the leg. The streak is over.
Right, so that was my most disappointing moment in sport, maybe my life. It was the beginning of the end of wrestling for me, is when at WrestleMania 30, Brock Lesnar ends The Undertaker's undefeated streak to go make it 21-1. And it was possibly the most pointless thing I'd ever seen. And Undertaker's such a huge crowd draw, and everyone loved him so much, and they just wanted to see the streak continued, and for really no reason other than they wanted Brock Lesnar to look strong going forward, that he won and ended the streak. And I think there wasn't a person in the world that didn't go, oh, that was a good idea that they did that. That's good for storytelling, that's good for the brand of wrestling. It was just a stupid thing. And then as stories come out since then that The Undertaker got concussion earlier in the match and he didn't really know where he was for a couple of days and stuff. But then, 21 years of being hit around the head would do that for you, I suppose. But it was just so absolutely soul crushing and disappointing. And I watched it we were on a school trip and it was 4 a.m. in an Italian hotel lobby with my mate Ross, watched The Undertaker lose. And we just looked at each other and said, why have they done that? What was the point of that? To have someone to win for 21 years. And it was a big thing that he was going, who's he going to fight at WrestleMania to win? And it was like a privilege to get beaten by The Undertaker at WrestleMania, And then all of a sudden, they just got someone who had been in wrestling, who'd come back into wrestling for about 3-4 months, just beat him. And that was it. And everyone, you can see by the crowd reaction there, obviously, the black guy with the white T-shirt on there, he was what everyone focused on afterwards. I think he's known as the Undertaker guy. But it was just so shocking and so disappointing. It just, I still can't understand why they did it. And it kind of ruined his kind of brand of the Undertaker. I don't understand why he let that happen as well. Do you have any opinions? I know you're not a big wrestling fan, but... I know you know The Undertaker.
He's laying on a couch.
Yeah. Sorry. It's like talking about Conor McGregor again. I don't realise how much I'll...
Laying on a couch and I'm the psychiatrist. When was that? Well, I don't know. I can't equate the WrestleMania numbers.
WrestleMania 30 would be 2012. It started in 82, I think.
So 2012, so like nine years ago.
Yeah.
How old are you now?
39. You know I'm a year younger than you. Where's this going, mate? Are you about to insult me?
No, I was hoping that you were going to, it was the years were going to have worked out so that you were 28 years old when that happened.
Oh, right. 28 years old.
Yeah, you know, like I was on a school trip watching it with my friend and we were both really upset. I was 28
years old.
Not quite.
Was I 28? How old was I?
I liked wrestling in two peaks. The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, maybe late 80s, early 90s.
Mm.
And then I would have stopped. And then the late 90s, early noughties, maybe The Rock, Stone Cold, Triple H. That bit.
Cool.
Obviously, Undertaker was pretty much there through...
Yeah. Under different personas, but he was in 21 consecutive WrestleManias, 22. I think it ended at 25. He had two more matches where he won after that. And then he lost again to Roman Reigns. Absolutely fucking pointless.
Who were the other versions of The Undertaker then? Who else was he?
He was the American Badass, where he came down the ring
on a motorbike.
And he had a bandana on and stuff. I think that was the only one. It was, and then you kind of had The Undertaker 2.0, and he started coming out with... like he didn't have a manager anymore, Paul Heyman. He was Kane's brother for a bit, you know. He was but a bit darker than he was just actually an Undertaker. Because in the 80s and early 90s, rather than give like wrestlers a persona like The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin, who had amazing personalities, they were basically just given a job and like work your character around that job. So The Undertaker was literally an Undertaker who ran a funeral home. But then they had a wrestler who was a dentist called Isaac Yankum. Bob Holly, who was Hardcore Holly, his original like character was Sparky Plug, who was a mechanic. Just, you know, the Big Boss Man was a policeman, and Brutus the Barber Beefcake, obviously. What's a fucking hairdresser when you think about it? Doink the Clown obviously was a clown. But yeah, it was stupid. And then it was wrestling has always been quite a little bit racist. So if you were fighting a black person, if you headbutted them, you would have to act that you that you're more hurt than you should be. Like if you ever, because black people have harder heads, especially if they're like Samoan or something, like, you know.
Wasn't there a bloke who used to come out wearing a shirt and tie, and he was like a Jewish stereotype called Shyster or something like that?
Erwin R. Shyster.
Erwin R. Shyster.
Yeah. IRS. So he worked for the tax company. They kind of had, and then they kind of moved away from it with people like Shawn Michaels and like the Legion of Doom were very good. But then all the big people in wrestling, other than The Undertaker really, were just personalities like Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage, you know, wasn't Randy Savage the pool cleaner. You know, he didn't need a fucking job. He was just really good and really charismatic, so... I don't know what Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I don't know if a steamboat is a job. As I look at my collection of wrestling figures from the 80s.
I never got round to watching that documentary. Was it a series that it was?
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. Yeah. That was
I still got that on my list to try and watch. Around about the time that was kind of being promoted, I heard him on a podcast, and it was really weird because even like as a non-wrestling fan, I obviously know who he is.
Mm.
Just shows you how kind of ingrained they are in your head as they're kind of alter ego, because it's weird to hear him just talking normally.
Yeah, he's got he's quite a nice person, quite a family man. Yeah. Likes to be away from people, but he's just very good at this thing that he's been given a talent for. But then, he still only had like three moves. He wasn't doing backflips or anything. He wasn't that exciting. But
what were they? What were his main ones?
The Tombstone Pole Driver. So he had the Last Ride, which was like a power bomb, basically. And he used to walk across the top rope, going old school, they called it. Like, he'd hold onto the bloke's hand, climb the corner, and then the bloke would help him walk halfway down the top rope, and then because it would hurt more if he came from further down the top rope, and
what
then
is,
punch him on the arm.
What's the worst move ever, in your opinion? The worst move ever.
Mick Foley, right? His finishing move for a short while was a kick in the shin. and that was embarrassing. But like, if you think of the people's elbow, you know, the Rock's move. Yeah. But he made that like amazing. You know, and then John Cena did this, like, you can't see me, where he kind of, you know, puts a hand over his face, runs twice across the ropes, and then jumps and punches him in the face. Like, that's terrible. And people would laugh at it. But they would say, oh, go on, do that thing, that'd be a laugh. And then the crowd like it, and then you keep doing it.
Oh, I've got a wrestling... Hulk Hogan came back in, like, later years.
Yeah.
Why did he have the tash, but then his face was black?
So he left on a big money contract to go to WCW, right?
Right.
Ted Turner, do you know who he is?
No.
Ted Turner was like the head of Disney, and he had a lot of money and decided, I'm going to want to start beating WWE, the WWF at the time. I want to start getting people over. I'm going to take all their big talents by offering double their money, and I want to beat them, and then I'll buy them, and then I own everything. Right. And Hulk Hogan went for this big money contract, and everyone expected him to be a good guy. And in his first kind of run, he was a good guy. And then he started this group called the NWO, the New World Order, with Razor Ramon and Kevin Nash, Big Daddy Cool. And then he was a bad guy. So to show he was a bad guy, he drew on him a black beard. So when he came back, and then like, and now he wears feather dusters and things, and like, you know, feather boas, sorry. Feather dusters, dickhead.
yeah. So that beard, that was just a black,
Yeah, and then drew on the black beard because he was a bad guy. So sometimes when he comes out now, if he comes out to the NWO music, he'll have the black
head. Some of these blokes cut their own heads with razor blades for authenticity, and he couldn't have just grown a beard.
But then, like, it turned out that he was actually quite racist. So for him to start blacking up as well, it's probably not a great thing.
He's had a few issues in recent years, hasn't he, with things that he's done in his personal life.
He's kind of made some comments about if his daughter was to date a black man, and it was recorded and then shown everywhere. And then also I think he got a massive payout because he had a sex tape that was sold, but it was like personal. I don't know if sometimes you hear someone's got a sex tape, you think, oh, maybe I'll look that up. Hulk Hogan, on the other hand.
Yeah. Well, who was the other person though?
I don't know. I have no idea. I've never ever looked it up. But do you reckon, like, at some point, the woman was like, "Oh, could you be a bit like more forceful with me tonight?" And he'd go and draw the black beard on.
Jordan Pickford tells himself, "No problem. He's up to this. He has to be." It's Jorginho. Pickford is down to stop him. England are still alive. It is the save of his life.
What a moment for Jordan Pickford.
Now, he can do no more than the rest of us than turn and watch 19 years old Bukayu Saka step up and take huge responsibility on his young shoulders. Saka has to score. It's saved by Donnarumma, and it's Italy who are the champions of Europe.
Oh, that'll do. I think undoubtedly, for quite a few reasons, like one of the most disappointing moments in sport for me personally, for the fact that I genuinely thought England were going to win the Euros this year. And I thought Bukayo Saka was like one of the standout players for me. And he's my favourite player in the Premiership and my favourite player at Arsenal for quite some time. So it was incredibly disappointing. I kind of, before the penalty shootout, I said to Zoe, I've kind of made my peace with it now. I think if we don't win, that's fine. All I don't want is for Bukayo Saka to take a penalty and miss, and it will be his fault. And when he stepped up, I thought, fuck, I've called this. And from the highs of that Jorginho penalty miss and that Pickford save, I've never been happier at a minute in football, or a second in football, when he made that save, and think, oh, we're actually still in this. All we need now is for your favourite player to score a fucking penalty. And I think from the beginning of the day, I had to distract myself by doing something else. I played golf, and then I had to go to the shops or something, because, you know, it's like FA Cup final day. Started watching the build up at, you know, 8 in the morning. Yeah. I thought, I've got to do something else. So built it up and built it up. And then scoring so early, just so the emotion of it all. I was almost close to tears when we beat Germany. I was just so happy. I said to Zoe, I don't think I've ever been happier at a football result than that. And, you know, I'm not a massive, massive England guy, you know. I'm not England are great and everyone else is rubbish. I'm a football fan before I'm a fan of a football team, I think. And just seeing, like, as soon as, like, Guy Mowbray, when he started the, welcome to ITV, you're going to watch the final kind of thing. He, like, let's first of all show you all the crowd trouble, and then people like going into the stadium and stuff. And I just thought, oh, this is awful. This is embarrassing. I remember reading a story of one of the stewards said a guy threatened her with a knife and said, let me buy. And she was like, I'm on £9 an hour. Yeah. Through you go. And I just, it made me feel sick. And then almost in a little bit of me, when we fucking deserve that, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought it was a really horrible, dark day for English football when it should have been the best day for English football ever. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, I don't know whether I sort of acknowledged it at the time, but I was over it quickly, because I just think, which always helps, to just accept it. And I think, yeah, all the trouble and everything did give me a little bit of that feeling of like, oh, well, we don't, those people who were doing that before the game don't deserve to be out celebrating tonight.
Yeah.
There was a bit of that about it. But it's interesting you say about the Pickford thing. I was speaking to someone a while ago saying that was like the Pickford save from that penalty was like, retrospectively looking back, obviously knowing what happened afterwards. But in the moment, like, my favourite memory of the whole tournament was that save, just because I was so convinced it was over, that the from where I was to where that save put me was just the biggest sort of jump. Like, a lot of the other games were, you know, the Germany one was good, like you say, but a lot of the other games were a bit dull at times.
Yeah, a walkover.
And then I can't, hard to please. So I'd moan about a game being dull, but then we'd go and score 4 goals against Ukraine and I'd be like, oh, that was boring. I prefer a bit of, you know, attention. And I end up just laughing, thinking, oh, just no game is going to sort of please me.
Yeah, like a couple of people I'm friends with. I'll say his name, Mark Bully, right? He's a good mate of mine. Yeah, he's a nice bloke. But he's not particularly a football fan, you know. And he was there with his face painted and watching it at home. And he was like so like upset with Chiellini for fouling Saka, you know, just grabbed his shirt. And I just trying to get through to him that was a really clever and good thing to do as a defender.
Yeah.
But then he saw it as like, oh, he's cheating. You know, that shouldn't be allowed. I thought, if Harry Maguire didn't do that, I'd be so angry. Yeah.
It's not cheating, though, is it? That's the thing in football. Mm. There's things that people do that is just kind of, it's cold-blooded and professional and everything else. But it's not cheating. Like, fouling someone isn't cheating, is it?
No.
I don't know. What is cheating? What examples of actual cheating would you say in football?
Henri against Ireland. I think we're at an age now where you should be admitting to a handball if it creates a goal, you know?
Mm.
You know, Maradona wasn't going to do that in the 80s. But Henri should have gone, put his hands up. I know it's France going to the World Cup and he would have been hated in his nation. But I think in yourself, you should go, look, that I actually handled that. Do you watch any of the qualifiers? That is, like, I'd rather watch Soccer Aid, I think.
I struggle with qualifiers. I think...
like, one of the biggest sporting rivalries for a while was Australia and Uruguay football. Have you seen that?
Oh, what? Because of... Yeah. Yeah.
So Australia, the winner of the Oceania. Or is that a zone on Crystal Bays? had to go and play the like fifth place team in South America. Yeah. And for a while, it was Uruguay and Australia. And then Australia turned up to play Uruguay in Uruguay. I was going to name the capital city there to be all posh, but then completely forgot it in my... Is it Montevideo?
Montevideo, or however you pronounced it. Yeah.
Yeah, I turned up and they were like, what the fuck? Who are these people trying to kill us? Well, we're getting off an airplane. And then, like Harry Kuehl was saying, we'd lost before we got out of the airport, basically. But and then I think it was Gus Hiddink was brought into Australia to kind of improve things, and they beat them once. And then they had to go back the next year to play them again. And they said it was like, you couldn't believe how much these people cared about football. When in Australia, obviously, you've got cricket and rugby as well.
Side of the lane without transgressing, of course. Johnson showing his good turn running ability, but he's down coming off the turn. And this is where he senses that things are wrong, begins to feel the greater effects of this muscle pull, and limps away and decides there's no point in trying to continue.
Two-thirds of the way through the race when he pulled up. Are you disappointed he pulled up, but he didn't finish?
He didn't pull up. He's a chicken. He didn't pull up at all. He's just a chicken. He's afraid to lose. I think what he should do is we should run this race over again so he can kick his ass one more time.
Donovan Bailey defeats Michael Johnson. I'll tell you what, I was proud in Atlanta, and I'm sure I speak for Canadians this afternoon from coast to coast. There is great pride here in this building. A tremendous performance by Donovan Bailey.
Okay, Mark, my last clip is Donovan Bailey versus Michael Johnson in a 150-metre sprint.
That well-recognised event.
Yeah.
I sent this to you pretty quickly, didn't I?
Yeah, this was within an hour when I said disappointed moments in sport.
I think I was, that was post-Atlanta, so 96. So I would have been sort of 15. So old enough to sort of follow sport and be interested in it, but obviously not old enough to realize that it was a pointless exhibition waste of time. It doesn't matter. And I always really liked Michael Johnson. I preferred him. I've never been a big fan of the overly brash, showboat, loud athletes in track and field.
Sure.
So I always preferred the way that he was versus the more sort of outlandish Dennis Mitchell and people like that. So I really kind of supported him. And I find in like individual events, like sort of like track and field like that, you end up supporting people, not necessarily just based on nationality. So I just really liked him. And I think his 200 in Atlanta 96 is one of my favourite moments. That would have been close on my sporting moments episode. So I just really, really liked him. I didn't have anything against Donovan Bailey.
Yeah.
But it was one of those situations where I made the mistake of being sort of fully behind someone to only then be disappointed. And disappointed because he lost and because he kind of, and because he's a chicken. Mm-hmm. as Donovan Bailey pointed out. Which is just a funny end to something that doesn't really matter, doesn't count for anything. And then to be sort of bookended by the winner calling the person who pulled up injured a chicken is just sort of reminds you how sort of juvenile and childish it was. I'm the best at the 100. Well, I'm the best at the 200. Well, let's run 150 then.
Because it was all brought out of the who's the world's fastest man. And everyone in Canada was saying Donovan Bailey's the world's fastest man, and everyone in America was saying Michael Johnson's the world's fastest man. I think Michael Johnson's one of the easiest persons to do a vocal impression of. What do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think I could do that.
My flatmate used to do it all the time. It always used to make me laugh because he used to do that. I'm Michael Johnson, motherfucker, and I want gold. It always made me laugh. But yeah, so it was a battle of who's the fastest man in the world. And I think because at 150 metres starting, I suppose you've got to start on the curve, haven't you, for 150 metres?
Yeah.
You're not going to start on the straight and run, have a finish line on a curve.
No.
I think Michael Johnson was thinking he was going to be ahead by the start of the flat 100 metres straight. And he wasn't. And that's, you can see at that point that he starts to pull up. Do you reckon he was an actual injury or do you reckon he is a chicken and he did pull up?
I
protecting his legacy almost.
I don't think it was a genuine injury. I think at the time I suspected it wasn't, which is why I was sort of found it to be a sort of disappointing memory because I was just, I just thought it was a shame. I liked him so much that I would have, if he'd have lost that, it wouldn't have bothered me because I would have just said, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't count. It's not a proper race. So... Which he could have said as well, which would have added to the juvenile nature of it.
Mm.
But that's weird about it is his 200 meter record, Atlanta 96, was 19.32, I think.
Oh wow, yes, it's crazy,
which,
isn't it?
Which is two 100s at 9.66 each, which at the time was miles quicker than the 100 meter record that like Donovan Bailey would have been running in. And obviously that's because he's already moving, isn't he? So he's kind of his 200s, his second 100, he's got a running start rather than a standing start. So it's not a clear thing. But yeah, two 100s at 9.66 each, like I don't know what the exact split would have been. I thought it was going to be closer than it was. The fact that it ended with someone being miles ahead and someone pulling up. I mean, if he hadn't pulled up, he would have lost. To lose 150 metres, he would have, if he'd have carried on, he would have been 3 or 4, maybe even 5 metres behind
at
the finish line, which is a big distance over a big like winning margin over a short distance. And I thought it was another reason why it was disappointing was that I just wanted it to be close and exciting. And
it wasn't. And to not have a rematch either. And
now,
then
do it now.
Yeah.
Now.
And in Sydney 2000, Michael Johnson only did the 400 metres and he didn't do the 200. I think that was almost legacy protection as well.
Yeah, because I was when his caption come up at the Olympics this year saying sort of five-time Olympic champion, I was thinking, well, that would have been 400 in Barcelona, 2 and 4 in Atlanta, 4 only in 2000, and then there must have been a relay gold in there somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think he was in a sprint run. He made 4x4, he would have been, obviously.
Yeah, the 4x4, so... So that, because I don't think he wasn't winning Olympic titles pre 92 or post 2000. So that must have been what the fifth gold was for, but not a bad haul.
I like the fact he's now on the BBC and he's like our kind of expert for these things. I think.
Yeah.
Going back to the race, Donovan Bailey, 150 metres in 15 seconds. If you look at like a door, which is 2 metres, so he's travelling 5 doors. In per second.
Yeah.
That's mental, isn't it?
most track and field records are mental. Me and Emma regularly.
Yeah.
Like if we see like Greg Rutherford on Celebrity MasterChef.
Yeah.
We'll always
Greg Rutherford, who is the new Martin O'Fire, would go on Celebrity Shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've got quite a long, thin front room. And we always say, isn't it weird that if he ran down our hallway...
Yeah,
took off in the hall. He would land in the garden like he wouldn't even touch the. He'd fly through our living room basically. If you were just sort of sat square on and you couldn't see the run up and you couldn't see the landing,
would he hit his head?
Just fly through the entire length of your house.
Would he hit his head though?
We might have to pull that. We might have to call that off.
Yeah, I think Callum Packard, who's a maths teacher, he was telling me he worked out how far Usain Bolt travels per second. He was going to measure it out in his classroom and couldn't fit it. It's just absolutely mental. Imagine if you had your patio doors open and your front door and Usain Bolt went through while you were sitting on your sofa.
A second. Push off with so much power and they're moving at so much pace. I'd love to see after a race, where their footprints landed, and see how far the distance is between each footprint.
Please subscribe to us at youtubereviewpodcast.blogspot.com or see us on Twitter @RockleRussell1.